know that cigarette smoking is bad for your health? Did you know that? In case you didn't, 9 graphic warning labels are coming your way soon. No matter where you live, they'll find you. Every nook and cranny. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney. America Tonight. That was one of the big stories that got a lot of buzz. And, of course, it did because the whole idea is the unveiling of the labels with a guy with a tracheotomy and the smoke bellowing out of the tracheotomy that was in his throat, basically. You know how they stick it in your neck and he's got a cigarette. And the guy that's laying dead and the baby that's crying and all of those warning type of labels that will make you at least look. But will it really make somebody stop smoking? And the answer is, even in looking at a couple of polls today, because whenever something like that happens, naturally a CNN or whoever, they throw up polls. You know, I'm the poll princess, right? And I checked it out, and pretty much 80% of the people who took the polls believe that it won't make any difference whatsoever. So there you have it. If you smoke and it's irritating to you, I'm sure you'll continue to do so. If you don't smoke, it doesn't have an impact on you either, unless everyone around you is blowing smoke in your face and you're concerned about secondhand smoke. While you were away, here's some other things that have been going on. Certainly this week, Hump Day is big because the president is addressing the nation at 8 o'clock Eastern, talking about Afghanistan, specifics on the withdrawal and what's happened in that country and the long war and the sacrifice. You know, close your eyes and I'll throw out a few words and you can pretty much weave them however you want to. And that's how the dance will be when Barack Obama, when the Prez, gets in front of the microphones and talks about Afghanistan. There are many commanders who do not agree with the president's idea of getting out of Afghanistan, even now that the number has emerged, and it's much smaller than I was told and much smaller than I think other people thought was going to be the amount of troops that started to come home in July, because the ultimate withdrawal of troops is 2014. Obama's going to announce, and you have to think this number was leaked, so it must be right on, that 10,000 will come back, that's going to be the final decision. Now, when asked about it, the White House press secretary, Jay Carney, of course, said, you know, where are these numbers coming from? That's just speculation and nonsense. That's not what the number is. But 10,000 is the number that is floating around. The advisors prefer a smaller withdrawal. So if it is that number, I think that they had some influence in this transitioning. And they're talking about turning over more security to the Afghan people. And after the president gives his announcement, he's going to head to Fort Drum. I've talked about this a couple of times, and talk to the people up there, because that military division, one of the military divisions on Fort Drum, has sacrificed so much, and they get deployed again and again and again and again and again. So the focus, no matter what the press says, really the focus is how many people are coming back in the next month. And what happens after that? Are there specific dates? The commanders don't want that to happen. They want more forces in Afghanistan for longer, because they believe if you pull out too fast, it would undermine a very tenuous situation. The Taliban and the insurgents in Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda, and how they could just go back into the villages. And I'll say this again in case you don't know this. Iraq and Afghanistan are two completely different countries. And one of the biggest reasons they're different is because of the illiteracy that is rampant in Afghanistan versus Iraq. the people there live very simply, do not want to be jacked with, and are illiterate. So when push comes to shove, if the Taliban or Al-Qaeda still has some power, who do you think the people are going to follow when the United States is gone, even if there has been some successes and in some of these villages with the people? Once the security blanket leaves, then what happens? What happens with the troops withdrawing? John McCain says he believes there's one more fighting season and then we can get things wrapped up. And, of course, McCain is the top Republican on the Senate Armed Services Committee. And he thinks that, you know, the withdrawal should be modest. So if it is 10,000, that means that Obama is playing the game with the people around him and probably with some of the politicians. But if you look at polls that have been taken of people on the street, 80% of Americans say they approve of the decision to begin withdrawing combat troops in July and end the operation completely by 2014. Just 15% disapprove. So I'd say that going in with that amount is probably a safe amount. And remember, it's about 2012. It's about getting reelected and not really trying to rock the boat, trying to make a big statement and pull out more, which is what I think it should be. I think more people should be pulled out instead of left, because there's always the danger that more will lose their lives. And for what? For what? I think it's better for them to come back. All right, here's a bold statement, one worth mentioning quickly, right from the onset. I can't make up this stuff, but the fires in Arizona that have been just wildly out of control, I guess that's why they call it a wildfire, the fire was likely set, they say, by Mexicans who were smugglers. That's what one of the sheriffs in Arizona truly believes has happened, that it's probably drug smugglers. And we're talking about 27,000 acres and counting of just scorched, destroyed earth and lots of homes that were burnt to the ground as a result of the fires, too. So a few people were taken aback when the sheriff, the Cochise sheriff, Larry Deaver, told reporters that the fire is flat out man-caused, and it started in an area close to visitors and known law enforcement areas for high-intensity drug and human trafficking. And so he's pointing it squarely on the immigrants who were smugglers who were coming over and saying, you know, I think that's exactly what happened here. 62 homes so far kaput because of the two fires that bubbled up. Mm. And there's 400 fires, by the way, burning in Florida. Stay with us. We're kicking the can down the road. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Making the right decisions is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or at worst, depression? Hi, Ted Anderson from Midas Resources. We all know when a company acts irresponsibly, divesting ourselves in a move towards safety is prudent. When the market becomes volatile, U.S. treasuries are a safe haven. But what do you do when the U.S. government overextends itself and spends beyond its means? Many investors are turning toward gold as a common sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas Resources has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold, discussing costs, benefits, risks, featuring full color illustrations, weights, and measures. The book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold may be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, the book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
Where can you find a super strength potassium iodide supplement? Right here at ThyroidKI.com. With global radiation levels at record highs, is your thyroid safe from radioactive iodine poisoning? Potassium iodide, the key ingredient in Thyroid KI, is proven to block radioactive iodine from damaging your thyroid. Thyroid damage is permanent and can lead to thyroid cancer. Unlike other potassium iodide products, Thyroid KI is formulated in convenient 32.5 milligram tablets and is independently tested for purity with a 100% money-back guarantee. With limited stock selling fast, act now. Prepare yourself and protect your family. Use coupon code THYROID for a 10% discount. Visit ThyroidKI.com. That's Thyroid, the letter K, the letter I.com. ThyroidKI.com or call 855-599-9444. 855-599-9444. Again, that's 855-599-9444.
Oompa, Loompa, Doompa Dee Doo. I've got another puzzle for you. Oompa, Loompa, Doompa Dee Dee. If you are wise, you'll listen to me. Who do you play when your kid is up? Rat, pampered, and spoiled like a Siamese. Cat, blaming the kids is a lie and a shame. You know exactly who's to blame. The mother and the father.
Oompa, Loompa, Doompa Dee Da. All right, who doesn't know that song? Come on, I know you know it. Willy Wonka, yeah, the Chocolate Factory. Well, here we are talking movies with Stephen Shohat and a big anniversary for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Stephen, as always, fun to have you on the show. Thanks for being aboard.
Hey, thanks, Kate. Yeah, 40 years, and they had no idea at the time. I mean, it got a great review from Roger Ebert saying it was the best movie of its kind since The Wizard of Oz, but it was a box office flop when it came out.
It was a box office. What did they attribute that to? Because it sparkled, it sizzled, it had funny characters. It just was ahead of its time. I don't know.
Yeah, the director, Mel Stewart, said it was all about the marketing. One of the things that might have hurt it was Roald Dahl, the writer, was bad-mouthing it. Roald Dahl had originally written the book back in 1964, and it was actually based when he was a kid in England, Cadbury Chocolates used to send samples to his school, and then the kids had to write opinions about it. And then there were all these rumors about the Cadbury company having spies and spying on other companies and things like that. So that's what inspired the book, and the filmmakers felt they had to change a lot of things for the movie. Now if you ever see the book, the illustrations of Willy Wonka, he's got a beard, and so I think Roald Dahl was thinking about either the actor Spike Milligan or the actor Ron Moody, who played Fagin in Oliver. But neither one of them were available to do it, or Ron Moody, in his case, he turned it down. So I think he was a little unhappy with Gene Wilder. You know, Gene Wilder, he got the role. He said, I want to limp, and then I want to do a somersault. And because that way, for the rest of the movie, the audience won't know whether I'm lying or not. And the director, Mel Stewart, was so impressed that he gave him the part based on that. And I don't know why it didn't take off. I mean, I really loved it when I was a kid, but you know, there wasn't as many cable outlets back then, so there was a delay from having it fail in the movie theaters to the time when it was regularly showing on television and regularly appearing as a, or being available as a VCR. So that's when it really started to really go.
Yeah, so years later is when it took off, which we see
sometimes. Yeah, 78, about 7 years later, yeah.
Yeah, which we see sometimes with films. You know how The Wizard of Oz, of course, I'm comparing different films, but how every year you see the showing of The Wizard of Oz, for a long time, and you know this, Stephen, we would see the Chocolate Factory, we'd see Willy Wonka. Every year it would have there would be a yearly showing before the advent of cable. And so maybe slowly it started to creep into the consciousness of people.
It's exactly what happened. And you know, you have the five kids. They never really did much afterwards. The girl who played Veruca Salt was probably the best actress in it because she, according to all the reports, and she seems this way when she's interviewed, Julie Dawn Cole, totally charming, nice girl, wasn't spoiled at all. The real problem was the kid who played Mike TV. In fact, Gene Wilder said, well, I love four of them, but that, you know, Paris Thiemann of Mike TV, I want to kill him. He literally said that. In fact, at one point he let some wasps loose on the set. He opened a jar that he wasn't supposed to. In fact, when they were doing the pure imagination scene where they see the chocolate room for the first time, which was what was really happening in real life, because the actors had not been exposed to the chocolate room. So they had this wonder and awe of, Gene Wilder's walking with the cane, and he accidentally clobbered Paris Thiemann in the face. And I'm sure it was an accident, but the fact was, of all the kids he would like to have discipline, he was the one. But let me say also that years later they got along fine, even though Gene Wilder recounted that in an interview years later how much trouble he was.
Then we fast forward from this 40th anniversary of Willy Wonka to the remake, Johnny Depp. When was that? Just a handful of years ago, we're talking about. And that got kind of lukewarm reviews in the beginning.
See, that's the case. You know, Johnny Depp, I think we talked a couple weeks ago about how he almost got fired after Pirates of the Caribbean. During Pirates of the Caribbean. And then after Pirates came out and was a big hit, he really could do whatever he wanted. And so he came into the meeting for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and he thought, I'm going to play him like a game show host with a hat and this funny voice that he tried on his daughter. And if the executives at Warner Brothers were worried about his performance, they weren't going to say anything at that point because, you know, he's red hot Johnny Depp now. And so, you know, he and Tim Burton, they respected the book to a certain degree. See, back when they made the one in 1971, the book was changed quite a bit, which was why Roald Dahl was so furious. I mean, there was a villain introduced, and the whole, I don't know if people remember the fizzy lifting drink scene, where Charlie and Grandpa Joe drink something they're not supposed to and go flying up in the air. That was all added, and made Roald Dahl furious, and he couldn't understand why Hollywood had the nerve to change things, and because of that he wouldn't allow any of the sequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory be made into a movie, Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator. So the Tim Burton one, they made after he died, Roald Dahl died, and in some ways they were more accurate towards the book because they used the actual poems that the Oompa Loompas said in the book, which are very clever and funny, rather than the Oompa Loompa song that you played at the very beginning. But in other ways, they did this whole thing where Willy Wonka is estranged from his father, and of course, you know, that's Hollywood. You know, everybody's on the couch talking about their problems, and they injected that into the movie. So I don't know if Roald Dahl would have liked that so much.
Yeah, no kidding. Stephen Shohead, always a pleasure to have you on the show. HollywoodStories.com, right? That's where people can go and catch some of your stuff.
That's right, and the book is called Hollywood Stories, Short Entertaining Anecdotes About the Stars and Legends of the Movies, and it's available everywhere, and the website is HollywoodStories.com.
All right, Stephen, we'll talk to you again next week.
You got it, Kate.
Thanks. I still like that song, the Oompa song. It's just, it sticks in your head, especially when you're a kid. And as we were just discussing there, the movie really hit its stride more in the late 70s rather than when it first came out. It's interesting how movie tastes maybe have changed somewhat, too. And you think a movie's made in the 60s compared to certainly what we're seeing now. Avatar, I mean, how much money did Avatar make? Crazy amounts of money. I want to say it's like $760 million was what the Avatar take was. And James Cameron with the movie that he said he had in his head for such a long time. And then ironically, another big box office movie, which couldn't be more different, was the Titanic. And that movie raked in, I want to say, over $600 million. And that's one of the top grossing movies of all time, which is why he can make his pet projects. But those two movies don't have that much in common. And then you go to the dark side of a franchise that I liked and would go and see the second it came out. I guess it's because when I was a kid, I got so hooked into it. And I think some of you guys can relate to this. You know, we see these comic book remakes and whatnot. And I was always a huge fan of the Batman. So when The Dark Knight came out, I knew it would be a much different twist in this installment. And certainly it was. Heath Ledger was brilliant. And it was one of the, or it is one of the top box office earners too. You know, $533 million. So you see that the threat of what the big movies are now are a little bit different in the genres, even when it comes to animated films like Shrek, because Shrek was such a big hit, and it was a movie that was a home run with kids and adults. It was like when I was talking about Cars 2, how you go to see it, and you'd watch it with a small child, and you watch it with an adult, and they get the sarcasm in it. So Shrek, $436 million. And then, you know, the throwback movie, E.T. The first time I saw E.T., do you know that I had to watch it in Spanish? And let's just say my Spanish was así, así. I was really trying to grasp what was going on in the movie, and then I eventually saw it in English. I was living in Spain, and that's why I saw it in Spanish. E.T., E.T. People were screaming at the screen. Wow. Coming up next, we're talking with Jeff Atticott about Afghanistan.
If you drive for a living, you don't get paid to stop or wait in line. Keep your wheels moving with PrePass. Bypass weigh stations. Fly by port of entry facilities. Stay moving at highway speed while the guy without PrePass waits in line. Save time, save money. Call 888-401-PASS to try PrePass free. That's 888-401-PASS.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
You've heard a lot lately about zeolite, but what is it and why do you need it? Zeolite is a beautiful, complex, crystalline structure that encapsulates radiation and odors. ZeoKing Zeolite naturally eliminates radiation poisoning your body may pick up from x-rays, security scanners, or nuclear fallout. ZeoKing flushes environmental toxins absorbed from smoke, cell phones, and chemicals, so it detoxifies heavy metals including mercury, lead, and cadmium. ZeoKing Zeolite helps boost your immune system, allowing your body to balance itself and cut off food supply to cancer and parasites. Order your ZeoKing Zeolite now from ZeoKing.com for only $39.99 and receive a free month supply with every order. Call 888-402-6779. That's 888-402-6779. or visit zeoking.com. That's zeoking.com for natural elimination of radiation poisoning.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, CrossbreedHolsters.com.
235 years ago, our forefathers signed the Declaration of Independence to escape tyranny and oppression. Today, there is a need to reinforce that declaration. What can we do to protect our health as a nation and in our homes from those who wish to control the quality of our air and water? To find out, you need to visit airandaqua.com right now or call 612-767-2777. You will receive a free copy of our Constitution, a newsletter, and bonus items. Aqua.com. Purify your life today.
You know that drinking pure, high alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health. And most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of most alkaline minerals available. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins and acid, helping you to regain your energy and health. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps the body to rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen, and raises the pH of your body to optimal levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.
To America Tonight, Afghanistan, and what the future strategy will be as far as this administration. That's the big topic that everybody's buzzing about. We know, we talked about it on a previous show, and of course, Wednesday night is when the president will address this. There's been a lot of conversation as to what the blueprint is, how long it's going to take for the drawdown of the troops, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of different angles on Afghanistan, including if it was a mission accomplished kind of thing. Terrorism expert Jeff Atticott joins us. It's always a pleasure to have him on the show and pick his brain about this kind of stuff. Jeff, thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, always a pleasure, Kate.
So initially your reaction to, okay, the polls have been pretty negative about the wars, Afghanistan and then Iraq, the carryover from Iraq, saying that people are weary of the money that's being spent and all that. Now you've got a big election year coming up. The president wants to be reelected. Now, boom, suddenly, here we go with Afghanistan. Time to get our ducks in a row. I think that kind of lit the torch there a little bit maybe earlier than a lot of the commanders thought would actually happen. But what have you heard as far as the drawdown, and what was your initial reaction?
Well, basically, the morale for U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan is at its lowest point ever. Yeah. A recent poll came out and just reflected that the soldiers there know that this is a political game. They know that we haven't won anything. They know that they're being asked to sacrifice their lives, perhaps, in the name of what? Because now we're told we're leaving, and yet the president has never defined what victory was in Afghanistan. Once when he was asked, how do you define victory in Afghanistan, he said, I'm not comfortable with that term. So the troops get it. I mean, they know, as our soldiers in Vietnam knew, that there is no there's no milestone here for victory, and we kind of figured that out when Obama said he's sending in the 35,000 to 40,000 additional troops. In the same breath, he said, and we're pulling them out next year. Of course, he's bumped that up now until he's going to make some token withdrawals now. But nobody believes, really, that whether we pull them out in 10 years from now or 5 years from now or 1 year from now, that anything is going to change. The Taliban, Afghanistan itself, is a medieval culture, society that's fractured, and you're simply not going to turn that country into a stable democracy. It's never going to happen. I don't know anybody that really believes that. Mm-hmm. Sure, we can keep the lid on as long as our soldiers are on the ground. We cannot be defeated militarily, but when we leave, we've lost, and that's what disturbs me, is that we're heading for defeat. And President Obama is playing a shell game to try to hold on to the 2012 elections. He doesn't want to pull out too many, because the country then would have even more turmoil, and he'd come under criticism. But, of course, he has to pull out some soldiers, because the folks on the left are very upset with him for putting soldiers in there. So no one's really happy with him. People on the right, conservatives, are wondering what we're doing here, what he's doing with these soldiers. And people on the left, of course, are upset because they didn't want to have anything to do with any increase in our military anywhere.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thanks for hitting up the finer points for sure. You and I have talked about Pakistan since I started talking to you. Probably now this has been 2 years. What's the move while this happens in Afghanistan? What should the move be with Pakistan?
Well, we spent billions of dollars in Pakistan. And the relationship is not going to get any better. It kind of is a strained relationship from day one, and day one I take from 9/11. And they've been playing both sides of the fence. They know that the Taliban and Al Qaeda are reconstituted in western Pakistan, and they are simply not willing to go in and root them out. And they have a society that really is not monolithic at all. The military has done coups in the past. They hold a lot of power. You have a fragile civilian, quote-unquote, government. You have a large minority of the population are infected with the virus of radical Islam. It's a country that is has many different angles and facets to it. And again, people are saying, why are we spending all this money? For what? And we just saw recently that the military, announced that they're going to take any future drone attacks in Pakistan as a sign that basically that we're at war with Pakistan. And it's a nightmare. You cannot conduct foreign policy the way this administration has been doing it. You can't nuance these types of things. You're not dealing with democracies. You're dealing with people that understand only one thing, the application of violence or the threat of the application of violence. That's what they respect. And the same in Afghanistan. I mean, as I said before, we have an opportunity to emerge victorious in Afghanistan, and that psychological spirit, if you will flow over into Pakistan if the president announced that we're going to take everything out of Afghanistan almost immediately within 90 days, leave a little bit there, because we've accomplished our mission. President Bush closed down the terror training camps, and now under President Obama, we killed Osama bin Laden. It's time to leave. And those that say, the whole country will go back to being a hotbed of terrorism. Well, if it does, then we come back and close down the terror camps again and then withdraw again. We cannot turn that country into a democracy. It's simply not going to happen.
I'm glad you said that. Call us now, everybody listening. You know exactly what Jeff's talking about, 800-259-5791. How about this? We're going to jump over to Libya. Senators McCain and John Kerry pleading for support for a resolution that they've come together on, authorizing more U.S. involvement in NATO's Libya campaign. What do you think about that?
Well, again, the president has the legal authority to conduct war in Libya. And this nonsense that he's saying, it's not really war, therefore I don't have to invoke the War Powers Resolution. Yeah, it really is war, Mr. President. We're spending, by September, we're going to spend $1 billion. We are shooting at them. They're shooting at us. They're not using sophisticated weapons. We're killing soldiers. We're killing civilians. We're using, weapons. It is a war. The president has the authority, though, to conduct war in the Constitution, Article 2. He's a commander-in-chief. But this idea, we've been essentially not told the truth from day one. The president said we're not taking sides, and then we're playing a secondary role. One, we are taking sides. We're trying to kill Muammar Gaddafi. And number two, we're not taking a secondary role. Please stop the madness. NATO is a puppet shell we are NATO, and the vast majority of military activity is being conducted and supplied and funded by the United States of America. That's not a secondary role. But the president's got us into this mess, and it is a war. Therefore, we've got to emerge victorious. We're going to have to kill Gaddafi and you know, hope that a regime that takes over is better than what he had, but there's no guarantees on that. But we've got to kill him, because now that we're in, we cannot be defeated. Same thing in Iraq. I was opposed to going into Iraq when George Bush wanted to do it, but once we went in, I was a very strong advocate for not leaving until we're victorious. We were victorious in Iraq. We left a stable country. We're not going to be victorious in Afghanistan, and we have to be victorious in Libya. We have to stay there until we kill Gaddafi.
Yeah, and of course, after the Osama bin Laden was taken out, which was huge, but then the conversation, as you know, especially to the left, Jeff, turns to, well, we can't just go around assassinating people, but why, oh, why don't they just take Gaddafi out? I don't understand.
Well, they're trying. I mean, they've killed civilians. They bombed civilian compounds. We've killed his grandchildren. We're trying to kill him. And I wish the president would say that. I mean, you know, he parses words. It's, oh no, we're not trying to take sides, and we're protecting civilians. We're killing civilians, Mr. President, and that's fine. I mean, that's what happens in wars. We don't intentionally target them, but yeah, we're killing civilians. And of course, this idea that we're protecting civilians in the first instance, far more civilians are being slaughtered in Syria. And not a peep from Obama about Syria.
Yeah, that just left off the table. It just fell off the table, I agree. And it's crazy what's happening there. Absolutely. Now we have a new defense chief, and this time it's Leon Panetta, who moves from the CIA into this role that Robert Gates is vacating. What do you think about Panetta in this position?
Yeah, I mean, there's some, you know, the president has got some good people around him that have come from previous administrations. Panetta is respected by both sides as a level-headed person that doesn't play politics. He's more dedicated to what's good for this country than what's good for, you know, one political party or the other. So that's a breath of fresh air. He has locked horns with Obama in the past over other issues. So I think he'll do well. He's a voice of stability. And I have every confidence that he'll do a good job. He's done a good job at the CIA. And now, of course, Petraeus is being pulled out of Afghanistan, and he'll do a good job in the role of the CIA director. But that means that now in Afghanistan, we're back without our strongest military leaders being pulled out at a time when we desperately need him to stay in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and as everything is starting to unfold, which is where we first started this conversation, how many troops were coming out. You mentioned the morale, and that was a big reason for what's happening there. The morale is so, so low. Jeff, one of the saddest things, I think, is the statistic that I think I read 18 soldiers a day after they come home are killing themselves, committing suicide. They can't handle what they saw.
Yeah, you know, in every war, I mean, even in peacetime, we have soldiers committing suicide. I've been in the military for 20 years, and we have people at Fort Bragg, and there's an epidemic where five or six would kill themselves here and there, and people wonder what happened. In a very large military, we have X number of people that are unstable, and we have people that commit crimes, that commit suicide, and, you know, the numbers, if you do a cross comparison, looking at civilians in that same age group, we have a lot of teenagers, of course, that commit suicide for various reasons in this country that aren't in the military, but a lot of people try to tie it to this, you know, stress issue. I think more studies need to be done about it. It is stressful. We need harder training for our soldiers. I think part of the problem is we engage in social engineering in our military and not concentrate on teaching these young men on how to kill people. And if you don't do that, then it creates a lot of unnecessary stress. So we've seen a lot of, again, social engineering in the military. We need strong trigger pullers that when they sleep at night, they have a very soft pillow because they don't worry about, you know, killing people. So I'm not really too impressed with the numbers on suicide rates.
Yeah, good point, actually, and some of the things that you pointed out there. It would be behoove us to certainly study that a lot closer. All right, Jeff Atticott, thanks so much, as always, for joining us on ATN.
Thanks, Kate.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig.
Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeSig e-cigarette's revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeSig.com. And LeSig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeSig.com, spelled LeCIG.com. LeSig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
If you suffer from poor sleep, you need MyPillow. Guaranteed to be the most comfortable pillow you will ever own. Using a patented fill, MyPillow adjusts to your exact individual needs by gently supporting your head, shoulders, and neck. MyPillow has a natural built-in cooling effect, keeping your cervical nerves cool, giving you the best sleep of your life. MyPillow will never go flat and relieves snoring, migraines, sleep apnea, fibromyalgia, and many other disorders. It's antimicrobial, non-allergenic, dust mite resistant, and best of all, machine washable and dryable. MyPillow is made in the USA, has an A rating with the Better Business Bureau, comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee, and an industry-leading 10-year warranty. Order today at MyPillow.com or call 952-442-6199. That's 952-442-6199. Mention coupon code GCN and receive 20% off your order. What do you have to lose except poor sleep? MyPillow.com, the most comfortable pillow you will ever own, guaranteed.
Hi, my name's Russ, and after my heart attack, I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I needed to keep on working, but now it's becoming a problem. I heard about these garlic cayenne drops and hoped it would help me. Well, I've been taking them for about 4 months, and the way I'm feeling now, I can see how I just might make it to retirement, thanks to Extendivite.
My name's Don Wiskin, and I want you to know Extendivite works. If you're looking for more energy, or just want to be as healthy as you can, now is the time to join the growing list of real people benefiting from Extendivite. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The eyes of the world are on England right now. The country is hosting the professional tennis tournament that boasts not only the uniform wearing of white, but the popular treat of strawberries and cream. That's next on Sports Shorts with me, the Sports Princess.
This Your Family Today tip is brought to you by Boost Kid Essentials Nutritionally Complete Drink, providing your picky eater with essential nutrition and great taste in one drink. Visit us at kidessentials.com. To make sure your kids eat healthy, follow the 5-a-day plan. Serve 3 servings of vegetables and 2 servings of fruit daily. Remember, a serving could just mean a piece of fruit or a half cup of veggies. If your kids are picky eaters, ask a nutritionist about other sources. For more tips like these, visit us at parenthood.com/yourfamilytoday.
For 2 weeks, both the men and women compete at the All England Lawn Tennis and Croquet Club in what is considered to be the premier professional event in tennis. Unique to this Grand Slam is its surface, grass. The first event was held in 1877, limited to just men. 22 gentlemen competed, and fans paid 1 shilling at the time to watch. The man who won was an amateur, Spencer Gore, as was everybody, until the open era in 1968. The lawns are arranged so there is a center court surrounded by all the other courts. Pete Sampras loves center court. He won 7 times. Roger Federer can claim 6. For the ladies, Martina Navratilova won 9 times, and current defending champ for the ladies, Serena Williams, has won it 4 times. The longest match of all time, though, was last year when John Isner beat Nicholas Mahut. They played for 11 hours and 5 minutes. Even the fans were exhausted. I'm the Sports Princess for Sports Shorts. Can you imagine? I still can't imagine being on a court for 11 hours and 5 minutes. Isner and Mahut, that's exactly what happened. I watched a big chunk of that match, and they did. They looked like they were sagging bodies with rackets in their hands toward the tail end of that. I would have hated to be on the losing side. Interestingly enough, what was heavily anticipated was a rematch of these two a gentleman. And sure enough, that did happen at Wimbledon. We're in the early rounds, you know, the first round and then into the second round. Some of the first round had to be re-racked because they had some rain problems, even with the roof that they have, the retractable roof. So a lot of the action got pushed back. The talk is really about Serena Williams, and Serena Williams got by in three sets and got through the first round. But there was a rematch of Isner and Mahut, and it was a very hot ticket, to say the least, for the rematch. And easily John Isner whips through that one. So it wasn't much of a rematch compared to what they had the previous year at Wimbledon. Speaking of sports, since we've dove into it here on America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, the NFL, I said at the very top of the show that we would talk about this. The NFL is really down to the tail end of the where the training camps would start. At this point, yes, you have players who are organizing workouts and doing all the kind of things that they, some of them anyway, they could do to keep in shape. But it's not the same, particularly not the same for rookies. If you've ever seen an NFL playbook, good luck. I don't care if you played football in high school and some college ball and whatever. You have to know the idiosyncrasies of a quarterback, of the linemen around you, what the play calling consists of. And so all that is out the window at this point. And then the question becomes, will we see football or not? Now, with the owners' meetings, supposedly both sides are proclaiming that they're not close, but they're getting closer. They're at least talking about it. And one of the things that's happening is they're looking at a new way to divvy up the money, a new model, a new revenue model, if you will. So a couple of the comments coming out of the meetings included Jim Irsay and Roger Goodell, of course, the commissioner of the NFL, and Bob Kraft, who owns the New England Patriots. Here's a little snippet of that.
It's a tremendous positive that the principals are talking. You know, players and owners are talking to one another, negotiating, and I think that's a positive step. And hopefully we'll all be successful in reaching an agreement that's fair and balanced for everybody. We don't have an agreement. We have, I think, a very strong view of the priorities, a very strong view of what we need to continue to accomplish in the negotiations, and a determination to get there. And I think the ownership is unified on that basis.
It just makes sense to continue, you know, to have a feeling of urgency and to work to try to get something done. So, you know, that's my hope. But these things are tough, they're fragile, and there's, you know, that's the reason I think you just got to keep working at it.
But I don't think it was anything that was, you know, overly shocking or any controversy or whatever you want to call it. It was more of just an update and knowing that we got to keep working at it.
It's good that things seem to be moving. But there's a lot of hard work to do.
A lot of hard work by the people who work so hard to be able to afford to go to a game, or this is just the one moment that they get a chance to chill, the pure fans of whatever team they root for, whether it's the New York Giants, the Dallas Cowboys, the Indianapolis Colts, the Baltimore Ravens, the Minnesota Vikings, whoever your favorite team is, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I've said this tongue-in-cheek, but I really mean it. You should definitely start thinking about what are you going to do with those Sundays? What are you going to do with NFL gone? Looking forward to those Thursday night games even, those Sunday night games. Forget about it. Matt, it's depressing to think of because we've been talking about the NFL and the tug of war between the owners and the players now for months, for like 6 months.
We have, but at the same time, I think you and I have always maintained that we think there's still going to be a season. And I think with what's happened the last week, it's heading more towards that direction. They got the lawyers out of the room, it sounds like, and there's just people kind of talking business with each other and really trying to hammer out a deal. And I think if one is done within the next week, they can almost start on time, too, so we won't be missing any other games.
That would be great if that happened. I mean, honestly, here on America Tonight, all of you who have listened in the past know, we do a really cool thing called Nail the Score. You don't even have to know football to jump in on this, and the phone lines are jammed, and it's a whole lot of fun. And it'd be very strange to have no football. Even, you know, we started off talking about Afghanistan. We just were with Jeff Atticott. And the troops being weary, tired, exhausted from this whole thing. One of the highlights for the troops was watching the football games. You know, in the Super Bowl, when you're watching the Super Bowl, and cut to the shots of the guys screaming and yelling who were rooting for whoever to win. And we've seen that year after year after year. Football is a definite highlight when you're in the middle of one of the wars, whether it's Afghanistan or the carryover from Iraq. Absolutely. I also said that we were going to mention this, so I want to make sure we do. The situation with the TSA and now what's happening in two states, Michigan and Texas, both states are trying to press for a law, kind of what we've called a no-grope law, meaning it'll be a criminalized act if somebody is considered to be groped at the airports. So $4,000 fine, possibly, this is Texas anyway, $4,000 fine, possibly a year in prison. And the TSA, Homeland Security, they're not even worried about it because they figure they'll just slam this down and they're going to let these states try and pass some kind of a law and then go after them. The one thing that would be tough is the enforcement of what's happening at the airports, because even though you've got flip video and cameras and all of that, I guess that's what would have to happen. If somebody, if a kid or a young child, in other words, baby, whatever, or an adult went through and that was happening, somebody would have to film it. You'd have to know the person's name and you'd have to send it in. But I love the fact that it's being challenged. And we go from that to what I said that's interesting is the possibility of searches, not just at the airport, but at bus terminals and train terminals. Can you imagine? Has anyone ever commuted in a major metropolitan area? Oh, forget about it. The last time, in fact, I just did this a few weeks ago, got out of a car, got a ticket, got on the train with everybody else who was commuting from New Jersey into Manhattan. And I can't even imagine what a nightmare that would be like if they decided they were going to have these screenings to get people onto those modes of transportation, including ferry boats, too. So I have to think that there have been some kind of threats that have ramped up. I'm just thinking, is it about policing it and more control, or is it about threats and concern? I don't know. You be the judge.
Hey, if you don't like America, then you can get out.
You will respect my authority.